Thank you for listening to another episode of Remake Rewind, the podcast where we decide if remakes or reboots should have happened. I'm Mike, as always. With me, I got my good buddy Alex. What's up, man?
It's me. What's going on?
Not much. Ready to talk about one of the greatest 80s franchises of all time.
RoboCop.
It really peaked with the first movie, though.
It did peak with the first movie. There's been four movies, and they peaked with the first one. There's a whole bunch
of good video games.
Yeah, and there's like comics and stuff too that I know are good, but we're not versed on those just yet.
No, not really. RoboCop obviously is a big deal. We covered this like episode 5 or 6 of this podcast. We're now on to like episode 120 or close to. So we're totally cool going back to this. Obviously, you and I haven't talked about it, so I'm excited to go back.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it.
I'm a big fan of this one. I watched this movie pretty much every year, but I've never watched the second and third one since I've seen them as a teenager, middle school teenager. I've never gone back. Like, I've just heard they're not good.
I saw the second and third ones quite a bit growing up because they would pop up on HBO and Showtime. And back in my day, you would just kind of watch whatever was on. But they would just be on, you know, 3 or 4 times a day. And I would just come home from school and just watch HBO for a while.
And then week after week, it would be the same movies.
It would be a month of like, here's your HBO programming for a month. RoboCop 2, you know, fucking Jurassic Park. That's a little bit later. But yeah, man. So I saw 2 and 3, I think, quite a bit. I've forgotten all of them because they're forgettable movies. But I remember he fought a samurai and I remember he gets a jetpack. Pre-Iron Man.
I think Jetpack is 3.
Yeah, I think there's like a rival Japanese company in the second one.
No, I think that's the third one still, because the second one, Omnicorp makes like an evil robot, RoboCop, out of like a drug lord or some shit like that.
Yeah, you're right. See, it's all just out of my head.
It's the only reason I know that is because I looked it up weeks ago when we decided we were going to do this. The only other thing from RoboCop that I really played or enjoyed was there was a RoboCop versus Terminator, or it could have been Terminator versus RoboCop on Super Nintendo. I played the hell out of that game, and I loved it. But this movie, I
remember having an ED-209 toy, by the way, and I saw this movie again, you know, a few years ago, but it didn't really hit me until recently that it's really like not a kid's movie, and there should not be children's toys made out of it.
There was a cartoon in like the 90s.
It is a hyper violent
like
movie.
Like a Saturday morning cartoon like that, like in the same art style as like real Ghostbusters. Like, which is another thing that really wasn't a kid's movie. I mean, it wasn't as bad as this, but
yeah. Like the new,
this is
the
definitely something kids should be watching.
The 2014 one has is more of a kid's movie, if you can imagine.
Yeah, and I've got some comments from the director on that one once we get to the second one. But yeah, I'm ready to talk about this one. This one's one of my favorite go-to 80s action movies. It's got one of my favorite lines in all of cinema. But yeah, I'm ready to go. Did you want to summarize this one, or do you want me to do it?
Your call.
I'll do this one.
All right.
In a crime-ridden, near-future Detroit, Omni Consumer Products, OCP, wins a contract with the city government to privatize the police force. With the police at the verge of a strike, a new transfer, Alex Murphy, is transformed into RoboCop after he is brutally murdered by crime boss Boddicker. RoboCop becomes more man than machine and brutally takes on crime until memories of Alex Murphy's murder kind of awaken something in RoboCop, and he seeks out his partner Lewis to help him take down Boddicker and corrupt OCP executive Dick Jones.
That's great. Now, before we even get into this thing, let me just ask you a question.
Sure.
Have you ever been down with OCP?
No.
The correct answer is yes. Yeah, you know me.
Yeah, you know me.
You blew that joke.
I know. I'm sorry. You want to do it again, and I'll. I was being a dick. I knew exactly what you were trying to do, and I just didn't go with Sublime. I'm sorry.
No, it's funnier if we break the fourth wall and let people hear this failed joke.
Yeah.
Did you say Sublime?
I feel like a dick. Yeah, it's Sublime.
That is not a Sublime song.
Don't they say it in Doing Time?
I mean, there's a song that goes, "You down with OPP? Yeah, you know me."
Oh, he said, then I didn't get it.
From the early 90s, late 80s.
See, there you go. I wasn't being a dick. For some reason, I was thinking.
You're either a dick or you're ignorant.
Time. No, I was ignorant
of pop culture.
No, I was an ignorant on this one. An ignoramus.
Anyway, this is quite a movie.
Ooh, that killed our momentum. But let's get into it.
I love this movie, man. This movie is so much fun.
It's fun. I obviously people who know about this movie know that it's famous for, obviously it's over the top gratuitous violence, but it's also like a sharp, witty, satirical film. And it opens with, you know, like a real great kind of satire. It's like, this is Media Break. Give us 3 minutes and we'll give you the world. And then it immediately goes into like a nuclear bomb, a president going into outer space, and they lose power at the space station. So the president's floating around in zero gravity. And then it just goes into like crazy consumerism as well with like an ad for like a Yamaha prosthetic heart.
Yeah.
And
being
it's just crazy
being not voiceover, what am I trying to say, the ad is hosted by a doctor.
Yeah.
And it feels like when doctors used to like give their recommendations for cigarettes, kind of thing.
Like it's pretty crazy. And there's a scene that'll come up later that I've seen this movie over a dozen times in my lifetime, but there's a scene towards the middle of the movie that I think is even more relevant today, and some of the stuff I just think is like super more relevant today than it was even in the past, because like that's what Dr. Oz does. Like he gets on TV and just like peddles all this like pseudoscience and shit that he shouldn't be peddling as a doctor. Like it's super unethical. And like here in 1987, you got a doctor doing that. There's a corrupt politician in this who demands a recount, and even if he loses, he wants to be reinstated into his position. Yep. And I'm like, holy shit, that's relevant.
The satire in this is just as relevant now as it was in 1987.
Yeah, I mean, the rampant consumerism is still a thing. Like, that is not something that's gone away. Obviously, you know, with Apple products.
I want a car with shitty gas mileage.
Yeah, the SUX 6000, the SUX 6000 with 8 miles per gallon. It's great. And then, yeah, 8.2. I'm sorry for that, you know, almost quarter of a mile extra gallons. And then, all right, but like, not only does this, you know, set the tone for the satire, but it also does throw in, you know, a little bit of the setup for the story. So, you know, it briefly goes over, you know, Omni Consumer Products, OCP, is bankrolling the police department. The police department is now privatized in Detroit. And then it also briefly introduces us to Clarence Boddicker, played by Kurtwood Smith, who's fantastic in this movie, Red Foreman. And so just like right off the top, like you get a ton of satire and then you get some, you know, little bits of exposition in a fun way. Like it's a really unique way. I mean, it's not even unique. Like that's something that's been done 1,000 times using a news bulletin to give you exposition. But to do it in like a comical way is fantastic. I it's just this movie from the beginning just sucks you in because it's just so weird and over the top. And then we immediately go into, you know, Verhoeven, who, you know, the director, he kind of has this staple of like co-ed locker room. So like we're immediately in a co-ed locker room with, you know, naked men, naked women.
Just 1987, this, you know, very progressive.
Yeah. He did this. He did it in this. He also did it in Starship Troopers. So I think it's kind of funny that he has.
Yeah, agreed. I think we should mention this movie is directed by Paul Verhoeven, who is fucking incredible, and I think an underrated director in Hollywood.
Absolutely, and you know, known for his satire. I mean, a lot of people. It's funny, like RoboCop, Starship Troopers are, you know, a lot of people's, you know, favorite movies, and you know, you can confuse them with just hyper masculine macho nonsense. But in reality, that's like really not what these movies are about. You know. A lot of people don't realize that Starship Troopers is like a super anti-fascist, anti-machismo movie. And a lot of people just, it goes right over their heads. Total Recall, same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, he did that movie as well. And that one's also a very deep philosophical movie. And most people just see it as an Arnold action film.
Yeah. And I think RoboCop similarly is taking the piss out of masculinity and machismo a lot. I think it's a little bit more subtle in this movie than it is in Starship Troopers, even though that still manages to go over people's heads. But this movie, we'll get into it with the next movie, but 2014 RoboCop feels like exactly what 1987 RoboCop was making fun of, those types of movies.
I agree.
You know,
and
Sylvester Stallone, like, and Arnold.
Verhoeven almost passed on this movie. Go ahead. What did he also do?
I was just going to say he also did Showgirls, which I think is another misunderstood masterpiece.
And you mentioned Total Recall. Yep. But he originally passed on this movie. His wife picked up the script out of the garbage can in his office, and then she read it. And she's like, no, there's a lot of layers and subtext to this. Like, you should absolutely give it, you know, another read. And he did, and made this masterpiece. So good job, you know, with his wife. We wouldn't have got the same movie if it wasn't for her, you know, convincing him to do this movie. But, you know, there's a lot of other things that make this movie great. And, you know, even though, like, the Ed 209, you know, there's certain scenes, like when he's actually interacting with RoboCop, where there's some really quick, you know, kind of jump cuts and everything.
What is the Ed 209 for the...
So Ed 209 is a just this very large, two-legged, bipedal kind of robot. It almost looks like a waffle maker on legs. But it's supposed to be, you know, and we'll get into the plot of this a little bit more detail in just a second, but this movie has these, like, robots that are meant to patrol the street and fight crime that are stop motion, and they do a really great job of compositing this in with, you know, the live action actors.
The miniatures and stop motion are fantastic.
It's great. Like, it there's just something about it, even though you know it's not real.
But it is real. It is real.
Exactly. But seeing, we talked about this with Dante's Peak, you know, even though, you know, your brain knows that that's not really happening, seeing a physical manifestation of something, like, it tricks your mind into thinking something that's fantastical actually works. And
yeah, it's much easier.
I think this really works.
Yeah, it's much easier to suspend your disbelief when there's an element of something real.
It's almost like when they're, you know, for an adult, you know, it's harder for us to fill in the blanks. But, like, if you go back to some of the 80s cartoons, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Transformers, Masters of the Universe, the animation is very simple on that. There's not a lot of actual motion in that. But, you know, when we're kids, we fill in the gaps with our imagination. And I feel like stop motion for adults makes that, you know, just a little easier for us to kind of put ourselves in a world where we can imagine a fantastical element. So really, really great effects on this. And, you know, obviously really great effects with, like, the blood effects and blowing limbs off and whatnot with the gratuitous violence. But I guess I'll just go into a little bit more detail on the plot really quick. So the crux of this movie is really this corporation, this evil corporation, is really trying to, one, take over the police force. And then slowly they want to take over all aspects of the society in Detroit and build what they call Delta City. And we'll get into that in a little bit more in a little bit. And really there's two major players, three if you really want to be specific, but three players at OmniCorp or OCP. There's the old man, who's the CEO, and he just has a few scenes. There's Dick Jones, who's kind of the main villain of the movie, and he really wants to build up these Ed 209s, the robots he developed. But there's an accident where it just brutally kills another executive when he's kind of showing it off in a board meeting. And so then you have...
That's one of my favorite scenes, too.
Oh, it's fantastic. And then you have Bob Morton. We could talk about the scene a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think that's the first point in the movie where it is very clear how far they're going to take the dark humor and the satire, because there are people in the boardroom that are, you know, rightfully shocked at what just happened. Like, a man is brutally shot to death in the middle of a board meeting on the, you know, 110th floor of Amazon, essentially the biggest company in the world. But the three or four guys in the room, you know, the guys that we're talking about, they're in charge, just, like, do not care about the human life that's been lost.
Yeah.
They immediately think, like, okay, A, this is bad for business. One of the other guys, Miguel Ferrer, is like, oh, this is an opportunity for me to get ahead in this company. And the guy whose robot it is, Dick Jones, who's, you know, the head of the creative team that developed the ED-209, is just like, fuck, this is going to be bad for my career. Like, I'm in damage control. Oh, a guy died. Who cares?
Yeah. And it's just, well, then you have the CEO is just like, I'm very disappointed. Just very... monotone, very of the fact, matter of fact. Like, he doesn't care that somebody actually died. He's just disappointed that
he's disappointed that
this inconvenienced them.
Yeah, he's going to be set back 6 months on their timeline for getting the robot cops onto the street. He doesn't care about
exactly.
The guy.
But yeah, I mean, that scene is brutal. Like, they give this young executive a gun. He's like, threaten Ed 209. And he's like, he holds the gun and Ed 209 growls. Like, it's a robot that growls. And then it tells him to, like, put the gun down. And he puts the gun down and it doesn't disengage. And it just full machine guns him.
I think for like a solid 30, 40 seconds.
Yeah. And what I don't understand is, like, imagine, okay, if it did work, How does Ed 209 arrest? It doesn't have hands. How does it put somebody in handcuffs? How does it actually apprehend a suspect? Like, it seems like Ed 209 can only be used for murder.
Yeah, I think that's very intentional. How is it supposed to do anything except shoot the person?
Right. So yeah, like you mentioned, Bob Morton, played by Miguel Ferrer, who's one of two people from Twin Peaks that's in this movie. He jumps the gun and is like, hey, you know, old man, like, we never hear the guy's name, but he's just like, I've got the RoboCop program. Let's give me a shot. Give me a go. And we'll make a human cop robot hybrid kind of thing. And then, like, the secondary plot, but it's also the primary plot, depending on the way you look at it. But Alex Murphy just transfers into a new district in Detroit. His first day on the job with his partner Lewis, he goes and stops a robbery from Clarence Boddicker, and it's just brutally murdered. Like, his partner gets distracted by one of the henchmen is like peeing off a ledge, and she goes to arrest him. He's like, hey, like, you're under arrest. And he's like, well, let me zip this up first. And
Lewis, the worst cop in the world.
Yeah. And she just stares at him and then, like, looks down at his dick, and he just laughs and, like, clocks her, and she, like, falls, you know, off a 2-story building. Survives, but because she fell off a building, she's, like, not able to answer Alex Murphy's call. And Alex Murphy just gets, you know, his arm blown off and then his leg blown off and then shot in the head point blank and is recruited to be Robert Cop, which is one of my favorite. I don't know if you've ever seen
Cop.
That one. Robert Cop. Have you ever seen the Chinese knockoff toys?
No, we were talking about, we were calling him Robatman.
Robatman.
Yeah, because this is more for 2014, but 2014 is basically just Batman, but he's a robot. So
yeah,
he became Robatman.
Yeah, but I always call him Robert Cop. Anytime I'm going to watch this movie, I'm like, I'm going to watch Robert Cop. You want to watch it? Because she's never seen it. But no, there's a, look it up. There's like a, you know how like there's always like Chinese knockoffs of, you know, like superhero toys?
Sure.
Robert Cop is the RoboCop one. It's pretty great.
Love it.
But yeah, that's pretty much the main aspects of the movie. Throughout the movie, different people recognize RoboCop as Alex Murphy. At one point, Lewis sees him in a hallway and she's like, you kind of look like Alex Murphy. And he's just like, what? And then, like, one of Boddicker's henchmen, at one point, when he's going to make the arrest at the beginning of the movie, he's like, dead or alive, you're coming with me. And then as RoboCop, he encounters him again and it's like, dead or alive, you're coming with me. And the guy's like, oh shit, dude, I know you. I killed you. And then Robert Cop figures out that he's part human and starts to remember his life and essentially goes and solves his own murder and takes on Boddicker. And meanwhile, Boddicker's also working with Dick Jones. Dick Jones hires him to kill Norton. And that's where one of my favorite lines comes in. There's a scene where Norton, because he just, you know, RoboCop is super successful. He just got promoted to being like VP of the company and he's got some hookers and blow. And Boddicker comes to kill him and he just walks in a matter of factly. He's just like,
bitches out.
Leave. Oh, yeah. Bitches leave. Yeah. And it's just one of my favorite lines in cinema. It's terrible. Fantastic. Like, it's not an okay thing to say, but it's just,
no, but it's perfect for that character.
It's perfect for this character and perfect for the movie. And yeah, it's just,
there are so many good one-liners in this movie.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's so good.
I'd buy that for $1, dead or alive. You're coming with me.
Yeah.
Bitches leave.
Bitches leave. I also just like, and the violence in this movie.
What does he say when he shoots the guy in the dick? Your move, creep.
Yeah, your move, creep. And he like, he does this thing where like this rapist is going to like cut the pubic hair off of a woman and RoboCop shows up. So the guy puts a knife to the woman's neck and he like scans and he realizes like, oh, based off the height, like he can shoot the guy's dick through the woman's skirt between her legs. And he just blows a man's dick off.
Incredible.
Well, I mean, he didn't blow a man's dick off. He shot a man's dick off. I want to be clear. He didn't do oral sex to a criminal.
Yeah. Oh, there's another one. He says, excuse me, I have to go. Somewhere there is crime happening.
It's so, I also like, he's on TV after doing an arrest and they're like, what do you have to say for the kids?
Stay out of trouble.
Stay out of trouble.
I don't think we're qualified to talk about it, or I haven't read up on it enough, but I would love to get one of our friends that are knowledgeable about queer cinema to come on and talk about the coding and subtext in this movie, because I feel like there's a lot there.
I think there probably is. We should talk to BJ and see if she has anything to say.
BJ, text us.
Yep. Clarence Boddicker is also a fantastic character. Like, he's just evil. Like, at the beginning of the movie, he sacrifices one of his own men to, like, slow down the police.
They're letting their dead friends, like, lay around left and right.
Yeah.
That happens, well, I mean, like, three times in the movie, where they just abandon one of their comrades.
There's a point where, like, they rob a bank or something, and one of the guys, like, burns some of the money, blowing up the safe. And Boddicker's like, you burn the fucking money! And then, like, he sees the cops coming, so he just kicks the door open, and they're in this, like, big van, and they kick the double doors, and it's like, Bobby, can you fly, Bobby? And then throws him out the window, and it just hits the cop car. It's fantastic.
Yeah, oh, and that's such a good character moment, too, because it's like, oh, that guy's serious. He's scary. He doesn't give a fuck.
No.
Well, and then a little bit later, Alex Murphy, before he's Robert Cop, busts into their hideout, and ends up killing one of the guys. And then this is the scene where they destroy Alex Murphy. They just blow him away, or shoot him away, I think you said. And they leave their friend that he killed back there. They never even, like, reference that he killed one of their crew.
No, not at all.
And I think it happens again later on in the movie, too.
No, yeah. No, it happens several times. There's a point where at the end of the movie, when they kind of do the... when him and RoboCop and Lewis go to take on Boddicker on his, like, home base, Emil, who is the one who recognized him.
This is one of my favorite parts of the movie, by the way.
Yeah, he's, like... he gets hit and, like, goes into, he crashes this car into this, like, toxic waste. Hell and he comes out and just looking like this monster, like, you know, worse than a toxic Avenger. And, like, his friend, Ray Wise, the second guy from Twin Peaks in this movie, is just, like, terrified. He's like, stay away from me.
Don't touch me.
Don't touch me. And then, like, the Boddicker ends up hitting this guy and he splatters into just like a water balloon of gore, and then he flips his own car and like almost dies. It's just an insane scene.
That scene was really funny to me also, because you get so, like, it's the premise of the movie is that they turned a cop into a robot, into a cyborg, right? So, like, already this is a fantastic movie, you know? But I got used to it and up until that moment, and then this guy does the classic superhero move where he gets thrown into a vat of toxic waste and emerges, you know, transformed into a mutant. And I was like, oh, right. This is like an absurd movie where ridiculous things happen. Like, this is a fantasy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It feels so ridiculous in that moment, even though we already have a cyborg cop.
So, I mean, I don't think we need to really break this down too much more. At the end of the movie, we get that iconic scene where, you know, he busts into OCP and he's like, I'm going to arrest you, Dick Jones. And Dick Jones is like, you can't. I fucking work for OCP and your programming won't allow it.
Because of the secret directive.
You're right. And so then the old man's like, you're fired, Dick Jones. And RoboCop shoots him. And then you get this, like, scene that's like, it's made fun of. Like, this is, like, one of the few things where the effects really don't hold up. Like, the weird, really long-armed man flailing as he's falling. I don't understand what that is or how that happened, but...
it didn't bother me that much.
It's comical, but, I mean, that's the end of the movie, and then the guy's like, what's your name, son? And he's like, Murphy. And so, obviously, the implication is that RoboCop now knows that he's Alex Murphy, and...
yeah.
You know, where's the line between man and machine at that point? You know, obviously, that's one of the big themes, but...
he's got an arc.
Yeah, exactly. But one, you know, I kind of wanted to go back to the satire a little bit, because
before you do, I just want to point out people keep on dying in this boardroom.
Yeah, and
I would maybe not have meetings in there anymore.
Is that so? The Morton has like kind of a friend who's an executive who is with him almost every time. There's a point where like they go to the bathroom and Morton's like, Dick Jones is a pussy, and you know, he's the old man. I'm the new guy. I'm gonna go and like. Dick Jones is literally taking a shit in the executive bathroom when he walks in, talking
shit
about
him. And he never washes his fucking hands.
No, he doesn't. Well, and so then, like, everybody realizes he's talking shit about Dick Jones, but Dick Jones is in there. So everybody runs, including his friend, who's mid-piss, like, whips his dick back in and pisses his pants.
He unwhips his afraid. Dick. He unwhips his dick mid-piss and pisses his pants.
Because he's that afraid of Dick Jones. And, like, Dick Jones was taking a shit, and he's just like, I understand you're the young bull and you think you're going to, you know, unseat me. I used to call the old man names. I even called him asshole once, but I was never disrespectful. And then he like wipes his hand.
Yeah.
He wipes his hands through his hair and his face. And he just shit. Like, he didn't wash his hands. He just rubbed his shit hands all over his face.
He also tells him, you know, I called the old man an asshole, but there are some lines I knew not to cross. You just murdered somebody in your workplace. What line didn't you cross?
I know, right? You're working with a mass murderer, drug kingpin to, you know, overthrow the city. Come on, dude.
Oh, man. What a great movie.
Yeah. So to get to some of the satire, you know, one of the other things, and this was, I don't know if this was originally intentional, like obviously, 1987, you know, the crime in U.S. was rampant or perceived to be rampant, which obviously led, this is why this movie is still relevant, because obviously one of the big things with the last election in 2020 was Biden was one of the authors of the big crime bill that has led to mass incarceration, which is directly in response to the violence in the 80s. So this movie is still relevant because obviously the crime bill that happened because of the violence was brought up with the election last year. But there was a scene where the first time that RoboCop, as RoboCop meets Boddicker, he's like stopping Boddicker from taking over a rival's drug operation. And while he's like reading the Miranda rights, he's like beating the shit out of Boddicker and like throws him through several like windows. And the director wanted to, you know, they wanted to cut the scene because they're like, oh, you know, people aren't going to like that. And test audiences loved it. They loved seeing, you know, just a horrendous villain getting the shit beat out of him. So then they were like, oh, cops aren't going to like this because, you know, they're beating a witness. And it turns out like they did like surveys and that was like cops' number one scene in this movie. Oof. Was the part where they like abuse somebody while reading the Miranda rights. So it's just like, that's obviously very relevant to all the shit that was going on last year too. Like, it's just incredible how relevant this movie is 40 years later.
Yeah. Yes, it's I agree.
Just, oh my God. So it's just it's incredible. Every time I watch it, you know, I notice something more. And then I already brought up, you know, the city councilman who lost his election and held everybody hostage and wants a recount and he wants to win no matter what kind of thing. Even if he loses, he wants his job back. So it's just pretty crazy. And then the consumerism throughout, there's all these commercials, there's all these crazy board games. And just like the people being desensitized to violence, you know, there's a like a mock battleship kind of game, but it's called Nukem, and it's just a fantastic movie, fantastic.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, why are you even listening to this? Go watch it.
Right, yeah, now. Go watch it. The only thing that I can kind of critique on this movie is it brings up and like this is in the subsequent movies, but like this movie was considered a risk at the time. They didn't think it was going to make money. You know, it cost about $8 million. It made $53 million. You know, back then that's a very, it was a $13 million budget. It made $53 million. So, you know, this was a moderate success back in the day, but there was never a point where this was guaranteed to get a sequel. And one of the big plots is that OmniCorp is going to basically take over all aspects of Detroit. And that plot is never resolved. Like at the end of the movie, you kind of forget about it because the CEO is just like, Dick Jones, you're fired. And so you almost forget that the CEO of the company is a bad guy too and wants to take over the city.
Yeah, it feels like the last 30 minutes of this movie were a little rushed.
Yeah.
I noticed the third act is mostly like pacing wise is like pretty quick. Like there's a good you know, momentum to it, but leading up to the third act there was like 20 minutes or so where I felt the movie slowing down quite a bit. That includes a scene where all the cops try to shoot RoboCop to death, although I thought it was funny that I just imagined Alex Murphy in the RoboCop, you know, outfit, being like, no, not again. Shot to death so many times in this fucking movie, man. Yeah. But I felt the movie slow down a little bit there. And then it kind of picks up for the last confrontation with Boddicker. And then the boardroom scene is like fun, but feels a little tacked on. And yeah, you like, you kind of lose the perspective of like, oh, this guy runs this awful corporation, but now he's kind of helping out the good guy.
I, no joke, couldn't remember, like, when I was, you know, doing our show notes for this and, you know, everyone was like, Omnicorp's an evil corporation. I'm like, why is Omnicorp evil? Isn't it just Dick Jones? And I'm like, oh, wait a second. No, they wanted to do this plot. Like, you kind of forget about that plot because there's this big hurrah as everybody cheers the death of Dick Jones.
To the new movie's credit, I think they leaned into that evil corporation thing.
Oh, absolutely. So the only other, you know, kind of trivia I want to bring up on this before we move into our next segment is that this movie was actually responsible for the apprehension of a robbery suspect in Sacramento, California. a thief ran into a movie theater that was playing this and tried to hide and got so engrossed in the movie that he didn't even notice the cops evacuating the civilians. And then, like, next thing you know, he looks around and it's just the cops and him in a movie, and they arrested him. So
that's awesome. Yeah. I have a piece of trivia.
Yeah, go for
it. The RoboCop suit was so hot and heavy that Peter Weller lost 3 pounds a day from
body mass. Gross.
Yeah, and eventually installed an air conditioner into the suit.
Yeah, that suit costs anywhere, depending on the version, anywhere from $500 to $1,000 to $1 million by the end of the movie. That's insane. Crazy. The budget of this movie was $13 million, so it's, you know, the most expensive aspect of this movie was the suit.
That feels like a bit of the satire too. Like, that suit is so impractical and ridiculous. Like, in, you know, well, in the world of the movie,
he was too big and bulky.
Yeah, he's like not agile at all. Right, he can't even fit in his car.
Yeah, so that's why you never see, like, when he's in the car, it's only ever just him wearing like the headpiece and the chest piece, and you never see him in the car full body. You always see him getting out or getting in, but they always just kind of film. It's
like totally like impractical, but it you know, it looks cool. And he's like shooting a bunch of people and shit. And I think that's kind of a comment on these types of movies. Like, you know, what else can we do, man? He's big and made of metal. That's fucking cool. We're going to do it no matter how little sense it makes.
Yeah. Cool. So I think this next segment, what have you been up to, bud? We're probably going to have to just shotgun it a bit. Because I know my list is really long because I didn't read anywhere near all the stuff I watched when we had Jade on our last episode. If you guys haven't listened to that episode yet, we did have Jade from AFI and Black Audio on to talk about The Thing. It was a great episode. So go back and listen to that if you haven't already. But
And if you're a new listener that came over from that episode, thanks for sticking with us. We hope you continue to.
Yeah, thanks. We got a new patron. I got to give a shout out to our patron. All right, so we got a brand new patron this month. Raised joined our patron list. He's giving us $1 a day. I just assumed a gender. I'm just going to say Raised. They gave us $1 for Patreon. And they went through and listened. They mentioned that they liked a lot of our other content. So thank you for supporting the show. And thanks for listening to more than just the AFI episode. So,
that is awesome.
Awesome. But what have you been up to, bud?
Did we talk about Bo Burnham Inside when we had Jade?
I haven't watched it yet. Katrina had like night shoots like all last week.
And it is so fucking good, dude. I've been listening to the album.
Incredible. I can't wait to actually watch it.
It's basically like a video album. Like, it's a bunch of music, and they just released all the songs on Apple Music. So I've been listening to that all week.
That's
so
tight. Good. Yeah, I need to watch that still.
I'm ready for Spiral now. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but I watched Jigsaw, the 2017 series capper to the Saw series, and I was surprisingly into it. It was really good.
I heard that it came back around. It was better, like closer to the first three.
Right, right. I think, and it's the best looking out of all of them. I thought it was cool that Tobin Bell got to really look good in one of these movies. The other movies are like very 90s and very cheap. This one had an actual budget and shit. I'll blast through the rest of these. Mitchell versus the Machines was great. The Polka King. I've heard that's really good. Jack Black. Mitchell's? Yeah, it was good. The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. 1.5 stars out of 5. The Last Boy Scout, which is incredible. It's another.
That's been on my list.
Tony Scott, hero of the 80s and early 90s.
Bruce Willis and one of the Wayans brothers, right?
Damon Wayans. Yeah, man, that movie is so much fun. It feels a lot like True Romance in a lot of ways, because obviously Tony Scott. I mean, Tony Scott has directed many fantastic movies.
Oh, of course.
Election, which I haven't watched in a few years, so that was fun to revisit. Fantastic. Real Steel, which I believe was on your recommendation, right?
I don't think so. It's good. I like the movie. I don't remember recommending it.
I feel like you've talked about. I feel like you've talked about how much you like Real Steel.
I haven't seen that movie since it came out, so I definitely haven't talked about it. But it's okay. A good movie.
Who told me about Real Steel?
I don't know, man. But anyway, it's a good movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I wish that they had made another one.
Well, we're getting Rock'em Sock'em Robots with Vin Diesel, so.
Yeah, that is a slap in my face. Me, personally. And then a bunch of TV that I did not write down, so.
I'm going to shotgun. Some of these I watched and just didn't talk about last time. So I started that Warrior show. It's a Cinemax show.
Oh, yeah.
But it's on HBO Max. Didn't like it. I watched the first three episodes, and like it's... All the action is at night and it's super dark. It's really hard to make out. And, you know, I really wanted to like it because Joe Taslim's in it. And, you know, I watched Mortal Kombat. And, like, it's just, I personally didn't like it. This show is just, it's like that one episode of, I almost said Lord of the Rings, but it's not Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, where like nobody could see anything because it was so dark. Every episode is like that. It is so dark. I turned up the brightness on my TV just for that show and I could still barely make shit out. So I wanted to like it, but I couldn't get past three episodes. So, I watched Ocean's 8. It's a fun movie. Yeah. I really like it. I think it's just as good as Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 13.
Surprisingly good.
Based off your recommendation, I watched Greenland, and oh my God, it's a fun movie. It is ridiculous, over the top. Gerard Butler. It's very sad, and like every bad thing that happens to like Gerard Butler's family is like their fault for like waving it in everybody's faces that they were selected to survive and they made themselves targets. But it's a very good movie. It's very intense. Like it just starts like 5 minutes, you know, not even 5 minutes in the movie, he finds out they've been selected to survive, but like survive what? He doesn't know. And then he finds like they're having a barbecue, and then there's an announcement that like, hey, there's a meteorite coming. Hey, Gerard Butler, you get to survive. And all of his neighbors and friends are like, what the fuck? And it just kind of goes, but it's a great movie.
Yeah, it doesn't really let up.
No, it doesn't. Like, it just puts its foot on the gas and never hits the brake. Like I mentioned, Katrina was working. She was doing she was working on a film and was doing night shoots the last couple weekends. So I had a lot of time to myself. So I watched all three of the Nolan Batman movies in the same day, back to back. They're great. I mean, even The Dark Knight Rises, you know, is definitely not as good as the first two, but it is still a fantastic film. I watched Street Fighter. I watched Step Brothers. I watched Dunkirk. I finally got it. That's like the one Christopher Nolan movie I never got around to watching. It? It's very good. Like it's. I think it's probably my least favorite of his movies, just because I don't feel like it did really anything unique. But it's, you know, it's a beautiful film. It's well shot.
I mean, if you didn't enjoy it that much, you didn't enjoy it that much. But
I did enjoy it. Like I think I still gave it a 4.5 or 5.
The timeline is super unique, though. I think the way they played with the timeline is more unique than Tenet, honestly.
I mean, I didn't feel like the timeline was that unique. I just felt like it was just three different stories. Like they were pretty concurrent. Like it was very good. I just didn't.
I think it's interesting.
I personally don't like war movies all that much. I think we glorify war way too much in this country, and I'm just kind of over it.
Sure.
But it was still a good movie. That's cool. Now you're a warmonger. I get it, dude.
It's so hard to communicate when we can't see each other. I haven't revisited it, so I don't want to like die on this hill, but I thought it was really interesting that there were three stories that we're watching concurrently that take place over different amounts of time. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
And maybe that's like self-indulgent or whatever, but I think that's more interesting than time goes backwards sometimes.
Yeah. No, it's a good, I didn't feel like it was that unique. It just felt like it was a one big event with three different characters and you were just checking in on characters. Like I didn't think it was that crazy. What I did think was impressive was how little dialogue is in the movie. Yeah. It's more like just that sense of unease and just peril. It's a very good movie, but you know, if I were going to go back and watch any other Nolan film, that one's probably the lowest on my list to go back to.
I just like having Tom Hardy in a mask doing eye shit. And
another voice, but no, it was a good movie. And then, just to shotgun the last few, The Orange Years, the Nickelodeon documentary on Hulu. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I saw you like
great,
that.
Great mix of nostalgia and just like background details. Like I had no idea how old Nickelodeon actually was and how progressive it was. Like it had, I think it was only around for about a year before they fired the first like CEO and then brought in a woman to be the head. And then they had like women as like all the creatives, like very, very progressive company. And just, I learned a lot about that company and then also just got like my nostalgia kind of like buzz. Like it was really good. And then while I was at the gym, I don't know why I kept with it. It wasn't good, but it was just like easy to watch and not really have to think about. But that Shadow and Bone show on Netflix, just watched that while I was doing my cardio the last week. And it was very predictable. Like Ben Barnes is in it, so I knew he was going to be the bad guy because he's the bad guy in everything.
Sure.
And yeah, and then Dave came back. I highly recommended Dave. It came back last Wednesday and had or Thursday, and it had two episodes drop the first day. And I love the show. You should watch it if you haven't.
Me and personally, or our listeners?
Everybody should watch Dave. It is so fucking good. It's hilarious, and it has like, you know, there's very deeply flawed characters, but then there's also just this idea that like it's okay for a man to like love their friends, like actually love them. And then this there's a one character who's bipolar, and like everyone just accepts this person unconditionally. And the character's super immature and he's kind of a dick, but like there's just something endearing about him. And I like little Dickie's music. So great show. Check it out. Watch it. Cool. It's got the Mike stamp of approval.
Word.
All right. 2014 RoboCop. Tell me about it.
Well, quickly before we jump into that, there was one thing I did want to say about, not even about RoboCop 87, but about Peter Weller, who plays Alex Murphy. He's also in a little movie called Screamers. Have you seen that?
Screamers, that's Lord of the Rings, Peter Jackson, right? No, it's not Peter Jackson. I'm thinking Frighteners.
Yeah,
no,
that's right. No, Screamers is about is way in the future, and it's about these two like mining companies that are at war with each other on a distant planet, and they've developed technology that basically puts a table saw inside of like a little piece of AI, a little critter like the size of a rat or something, or a hedgehog, and it goes through the ground and can detect enemy combatants and jumps up at them.
Oh, weird.
And kills them. And that technology has developed to the AI like started becoming self-aware. So now both of these mining factions are stuck on opposite sides of the planet, and neither one of them can go out into the battlefield lest they be attacked by the other one's Screamers. And it's just like, that's a fucking cool movie, man. I recommend
the other movie that, since we're bringing up his movies, Leviathan with him is also really interesting. Like they're in like a submarine, and then they like find this like they're like a salvage crew or something. It's been a long time since I've watched it, but then they like find this this flask, but like, and they start drinking it, but like it has like some mutagen, and like they turn into like monsters or some shit.
Let's do a Patreon episode where I watch Leviathan and you watch Screamers. We both watch both of them.
Okay.
Just a little Peter Weller.
Yeah, our next Patreon episode will be out next week, and it's going to be on Fast 9, but that is a good one to have in our back pocket for another one.
Yeah, yeah. All right, 2014, robot person,
police Robert
officer,
cop,
Batman, cop.
Robat
Robert.
Cop.
In 2028, war will largely be fought by drones and robots. The United States is the lone holdout in regard to allowing robots to take the form of police officers. Omnicorp believes a cyborg is the loophole they need to sway public opinion and make billions of make billions of dollars off a robotic police force. This is a tongue twister. When police officer Alex Murphy is critically wounded, Omnicorp tricks his wife Clara into allowing them to turn Murphy into Robo Robert Cop. Robert Cop Batman. RoboCop single-handedly reduces crime by 80%, but only by overriding Murphy's humanity with programming and hormones. They lower his dopamine to non-existent levels, so he's basically a drone. Murphy is somehow able to override his programming and begins to solve his own murder. Afraid of Murphy uncovering what they did to him, Omnicorp attempts to destroy their own creation.
Yep.
That's what happens in this movie.
So I'm just going to say this right off the top, and I feel kind of bad. I did reach out to Joel Kinnaman on Twitter to see if, you know, hope against hope, we could try to get him on.
Now, do you, I'm interrupting you. Do you have the voicemail that Joel Kinnaman left you where he's just using horrible racial slurs and calling you every awful name under the sun?
No, I deleted that. I didn't want to do him dirty because I'm sure he listened to the old episode and I wasn't kind. and I'm not going to bash him, but I'm also not going to be kind. I didn't find much of a difference between his Alex Murphy and his zombified, hormoned, overly programmed version. Like, he was very dry in this movie. I think this movie could have done a lot better with a more charismatic lead. And I'm not saying he's not a good actor. I think he's fantastic in other things. Like, I think he's incredible in House of Cards in the season that he's in. But he is not charismatic in this movie. He's very flat, very boring, and I just was not endeared to him at all.
Well, let me hop on my boy Kinnaman's side, because I watched the one that I forgot in my What Are You Up To, Bud, is For All Mankind. I binged both seasons of that show, and it is so good.
I've heard it's good. That's on my list. I'm going to start that this week.
And I enjoyed him in it, and I'm looking forward to The Suicide Squad. The one Suicide Squad movie that exists by James Gunn.
Oh, that looks so good. I can't wait for that one.
I'm very excited for that. I think that Kinnaman got done dirty by... I don't even know if I want to say the script of this movie. I feel like it didn't know what it wanted to be. And I don't even think it's the director's fault. This feels like a movie that was noted to death.
That's 100% true. So,
I'm gonna do a hot take here. I mostly enjoyed this movie. I don't think it's that bad. I don't think it deserves all the hate that it got. I don't think that it needs to be a RoboCop movie. I think if this movie came out and it was not called Robert Cop, actually, let me rephrase. I think if this movie came out and it was called Robert, the cop who was turned into a robot, but is not affiliated with the 1987 movie RoboCop at all, it would be a better movie.
I think that there's some good ideas in here, and they brought the same staff back. So, like, Edward Neumeier and Michael Miner, who wrote the original one, came back for this. So a lot of the original,
I think, Verhoeven was the staff. I think that's evidence that Verhoeven was the driving force behind making this making that a satire.
I think so, because the thing is, so the director Jose Badija. He was he did, you know, Narcos and a few other, you know, Brazilian movies. This was like his first like big movie, and he said that this was like the worst experience of his life. For every 10 ideas that he came up with, Sony shot it down.
He
said this was absolutely the worst thing he ever did, and he thought it should have been rated R, and
because
Sony kneecapped him.
This movie cost $100 million, and you cannot get that kind of money involved and do anything, you know, remotely controversial. Like,
right.
RoboCop 87 does not get made today with a $100 million budget.
I mean, it just depends on the director. You have to have the right, you're definitely not with a new director, not with a big studio like this. Like, in this,
I mean,
in
even
this time,
even
right?
Like, even seasoned directors, you know, who, what directors have that type of sensibility and could pull that off? Like, we just talked about James Gunn, maybe, but he's still, he's making four quadrant movies. He's really good at it.
Yeah. I think he's getting to the point where he'll be able to do whatever he wants. Obviously, if Christopher Nolan really wanted to go ham on something like this, he could probably get it.
But he gets that kind of money because he doesn't do that.
Right. Tarantino could. You're right. There are very few directors who could, and I don't disagree. And originally, this was supposed to be like a $60 million movie, and it ballooned. So Sony got really scared, and apparently, like, executives from Sony were on set like every day, making sure that the director didn't overstep
part of the
guarantee. It's PG-13.
Yeah, and making it PG-13 is ridiculous. Like, again, just don't call it a RoboCop movie. Make it about something else. There's enough meat on the story bones with Joel Kinnaman, or with Alex Murphy, the same character. You know, losing his humanity that wasn't explored as on the surface in the original RoboCop, that I thought that was interesting. It could have just been its own thing. It was, you know, different enough
from RoboCop. I agree with you on that. Like, there's certain things in this one that I think are really interesting. And like in RoboCop 87, and I purposely didn't bring it up until I can talk about it with this one. There's a scene in the 87 one where they're like putting him together, and there's a point they're like, oh, his arm's intact. And Morton's like, nah, get rid of it. Like they really want him to be like all robot. And in this version, they initially want him to be more or less human in a robotic body until they figure out that like he's still not as effective as a robot. So then they, you know, manipulate him. But I liked that, you know, we got to know him as Alex Murphy a little bit. I just thought Alex Murphy was kind of boring. And then he, you know, even as a robot, we saw that he's like, he thought it was almost like a Frankenstein kind of thing where he's like, I'm a monster, kill me, I hate this. And then he's
that was
slowly,
one of the more effective
shots
in this movie too, when they take away all the robot parts and he's just like a sack of lungs and a heart,
which
and a head.
I don't understand
hand.
Why you would keep the lungs and the one hand. Like, the one hand was a nod to them saying, should we get rid of it in the previous movie? But I honestly don't see the point of why you would keep the lungs, which is an incredibly vulnerable part of the body. But you know, that's just me being practical. But
just to circle back to the budget, I'm not surprised that the budget of this thing, that it went way over budget, because it's got Gary Oldman, Michael Keaton, Jackie Earle Haley, who's hot at this point,
Sam Jackson,
Michael K. Williams, Jay Baruchel, Sam fucking Jackson, in a role that like doesn't need to exist in the movie, frankly, and
he's,
also doesn't need to be played by Sam Jack.
He was Bill O'Reilly, essentially.
Yeah, but like the satire, the element of satire that's coming from the TV shows in this movie is not as important or interesting as it is in RoboCop 87.
Yeah, it's
and then on top of that, they get someone like as recognizable as Sam Jack to do it. And it's just like, well, okay, why are we? And the first 10 minutes of the movie is just Sam Jack doing a newscast, you know, with the people in Tehran.
Yeah. It's essentially him just being Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity kind of thing. Like, the satire, like any satire in this movie, is all on the surface. Like, there's no thinking or having to decode what they're trying to say about this one. Like, it is very obvious. Like, you know, here's the conservative news outlet and they're bad. Which I don't disagree with, but it's all on the surface. There's nothing to really think or ponder.
Yeah, and I feel like it's also kind of spread thin because we spend so much time with Sam Jack and like doing this critique of, you know, Fox News, essentially. And then there's also what we mentioned earlier, where they lean into the evil corporation thing, where like Michael Keaton is basically Jeff Bezos, you know, in 15 years, which I think is interesting. I like that they were doing that. But when you're spreading all of this cultural critique around, it loses its... It dulls the impact. And it dulls the edge of it.
Bringing up Michael Keaton, like, I actually did like a lot of the things they were doing with OCP in this, or they could just call it Omnicorp in this one. I kind of used Omnicorp loosely in the last one, even though they called it OCP. But I also like that there's like, they put like RoboCop through focus groups. Like, they, you know, it wasn't just Alex Murphy. They considered all these different people, and Gary Oldman like turned him down because he has a heart and he has a soul, and he didn't want to be part of this program, but he's trying to get his robotic prosthesis program funded. So he begrudgingly helps develop RoboCop. But then there's a point where Jay Baruchel is like the marketing guy, and they do like, they have all these different like versions of the costume or the suit, you know, like, oh, this one transforms and has lights, and this one is the nightmare mode and it scares people. Like, I really like that idea of the marketing behind this, that this is a product that they're trying to sell, and this is the prototype, and we're going to come out with different designs and everything. I thought that was a really cool thing, and I just didn't think it did enough on that.
Yeah, again, if they were spending less time with Sam Jack being Bill O'Reilly, which is interesting, but like not terribly fascinating, and spend a little bit more time with you know, marketing a product and like how soulless that process becomes. And I think that would have stayed relevant too, because you know, there's no way for them to know this in 2014, but in the last 7 years, that's become a part of everyone's life. Everyone's trying to like brand themselves on Instagram and stuff. We're all doing, or anyone that's, you know, creative and trying to do a thing on Instagram or TikTok or whatever, they're all constantly thinking about, you know, how they can do this within themselves. And it's like not healthy. And, you know, this movie had an opportunity to explore that. And like I said, it's, I think Sony fucking noted it to death. I'm sure that Jose Padilla had some interesting ideas for that.
No, absolutely.
I do want to say that I like that they gave Michael Keaton permission to kind of go crazy in this. I really like crazy Keaton.
Verhoeven commented on this. He watched this and the 2012 Total Recall and was both like, this was just studio hack job. Like, it didn't do anything. Like, and I do agree. Like, when I watched this a few years ago, so this is the third time I've watched this movie. I watched it in theaters. And I remember telling one of my really good friends who's a big RoboCop fan, he was like, should I go and watch it? And I'm like, not really. If you've seen the trailer, like if you go back and watch the trailer for this movie, you've seen the movie. There's nothing that you can't piece together from the trailer in this movie. So I told him, I'm like, you saw the trailer, you saw this movie. And I thought that was the case with the Total Recall movie as well. But like, yeah, this movie just to me didn't, it had some unique ideas and it took some swings, but I just don't think anything connected in the right way. Like, I think this could have been trimmed a little bit. Like the dirty cop element could have been removed. And it could have just been OCP interacting with shit and trying. Like, I think it would have made more sense to have OCP be the one behind the crime boss trying to stir up crime so that way they can justify putting robots on the street and streamlining it and getting rid of the crooked cops. Like, I think there's a lot of things they could have done. I think they could have leaned in more on what if Alex Murphy getting overwhelmed by being a robot, you know, but if he shut himself down and became more robotic because he's overwhelmed by all the information he's getting. Like, I think there's so many different interesting things they could have done that they've touched on in this movie that they just didn't quite reach the full potential on any of these ideas. I think there's just too many ideas it's trying to juggle and didn't deliver one of them well.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you cut out all of the inflated salaries of the A-list stars in this movie and just replace them with like good character actors and got the budget of this thing down to like 10 or 15 million.
I don't think you can ever get it that low, but I mean, if they kept it at 60 million, I think they could have had something.
I was saying, if you get the budget of this thing down to like 10 or 15 or even like way below that and like really cut back on the action, but find an interesting way, to shoot it or allude to it off camera or whatever, and just make it a movie about a guy losing his humanity to, you know, fucking Amazon, trying to turn him into a product as a way to, you know, make some money by getting through a loophole in, with their buddies in Congress. I think that's interesting. I think that could have done well, even on like the independent film circuit, you know, as just like a low budget sci-fi.
Yeah. It's almost like the Transcendence movie with Johnny Depp. Like, both of these movies kind of touched on that same thing. Like, there's a good idea in both of those movies, but neither one of them quite delivered. And like, visually, like, I don't want to just bash this movie because there are certain things, like, I obviously have talked about some of these ideas are good. I just don't think they landed. But visually, there's some really interesting shots in this movie.
Yeah, I agree.
There were quite a few really long, you know, 10, 15, 20 second cuts. There was this one shot that I thought was incredible when he first wakes up and he realizes, you know, what's happened to him. And he, you know, kind of busts out and he starts running through the hall. There's this part where he like runs into this like clean room and like the steam's going and it's just kind of this like over the shoulder. You just see his shoulder and his head and it's just like him barreling through this hallway. And it was just almost like a monster, you know, running through a lab. Like, it was really effective and cool. Like, there were some really cool shots, and like, it's just a shame that, you know, there wasn't
favorite shots. One of the ones that stuck out to me was when he finally goes and sees his kid after he's been turned into RoboCop, and there's like a long two shot, like Wes Anderson, you know, very like side framing, where he goes up to his kid and the kid is sitting down and he's fully in the shot, but Robert Cop walks into the frame and his head is cut off. And it's just like very jarring and like unnatural for him to be standing out of frame while this kid is in frame looking up at him.
Yeah.
And they hang on it for like 5 or 10 seconds. And then he finally kneels down into frame. And I was just like, oh man, that's like a more interesting visual than.
I agree. Because in that moment, almost. He's still juggling trying to be human in this new body that he's not used to. Like, it's a very effect. Yeah. Like, they do a lot of, like, really good camera and shot setting up that. And
he's also, like, a stranger to his kid, kind of, or he's worried about being one.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's also just, like, a jarring moment. You didn't know which way it was going to go. And having, like, an uncomfortable shot like that and sitting in it, I think, enhances that.
I 100% agree with you. I think that was a very effective scene. And I think it's just, you know, a few of the highlights. And I just think overall, I think a few, you know, people who did the heavy lifting, I think Gary Oldman kind of phoned it in on this. I don't think he gave his best performance, but I think Jackie Earle Haley was the shining star of this movie. I thought he was did the most with what he had.
Yeah, I mean, that's funny. I kind of feel the same way about Jackie Earle Haley. I feel like Gary Oldman phoning it in is still pretty good. And I feel like Jackie Earle Haley is just, like, not going to be a smarmy piece of shit that you kind of love to hate.
Yeah.
I think both of those guys are just doing the thing that they do.
I feel like everything I see him in, he does something different every time. Like, he's not, you know, people might know him as Rorschach or Freddy Krueger. Or this, and obviously he was the kid in Bad News Bears as well.
All pieces of shit that you love to hate.
Yeah, but there's just something about.
I'm not diminishing Jackie Earle Haley at all. And same thing with Joel Kinnaman. I don't think I don't know that Joel Kinnaman has a ton of range. I think he's kind of always doing the same thing. But I like him, and he's charismatic, and I think he still manages to. I think all of these guys still manage to wring emotion out of moments.
I think Jackie Earle Haley 100% elevated John Kinnaman. I think John Kinnaman was much more animated.
This is why he didn't want to be on our podcast. You don't even know his name.
Joel Kinnaman
John Killaman.
Joel Kinnaman was much more animated when he was in the scenes where he was interacting with the antagonistic Maddox, played by Jackie Earle Haley. So I feel like he elevated other people's performances, and he got the laugh when after that big scene, which honestly, this, the way they tested RoboCop, I'm curious how you feel about this, but the big crux of the movie was they wanted to have robots policing the streets, but because of the Dreyfus Act they couldn't, and so they found this as the loophole, and so they ran it through a scenario, and he did the scenario perfectly. So it was just like a robot doing the scenario and him doing the scenario, but he ended up being about 5.2 seconds slower because at a key junction, when there was a bad guy holding a hostage, he's like, "Hey, stop holding the hostage." Like, he gave the hostage a chance to, or the criminal a chance to give up. And when the criminal didn't give up, he shot him, where the robot just immediately shot him. And to me, I didn't see that as a failure. He didn't take any damage. He still killed all the other villains who got in the way. And the hostage wasn't killed, and it was only a few second difference. I'm like, dude, that's a win. He was super effective. Nothing bad happened to him, blah, 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 blah. But the company was like, that's not enough. So then they basically rewrote his brain to listen to the software when battle's going and releases chemicals to make him think he made the decisions, even though he didn't. So that was one thing I didn't really get almost. Dude, this is still he's still way better than a regular cop. And then the other test was he had to go against 40 robots that have the same programming as him and Jackie Earle Haley. And if he got shot by Jackie Earle Haley, he loses and dies, essentially. I didn't understand how that's a fair test to have him go against 50, ish identical versions of himself.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not super fair. I think they're trying to test him as hard as they can to make sure that he's absolutely, the best version of the product that they're trying to create.
Right.
And I think the first scenario that you mentioned is another interesting thing that this movie doesn't really explore, because what they're talking about, but they don't actually say, and they don't end up exploring, is, okay, this robot does it faster than Joel Kinnaman, than Alex Murphy does, but Alex Murphy has humanity and is able to give the criminal an opportunity or whatever. There's 100 different ways that can go, but he's got the human element, and the company sees that as a bug, not a feature.
Right.
And I think that
ultimately, but that was the whole point of putting a human in the robot, though.
And ultimately, a lot of the communities that these robot cops or cyborg cops are going to be in probably want some human element in there. And the company doesn't give a shit about that.
You know, yeah.
They only care about their interests and the max amount of control that they can have. And I feel like that's, you know, part of the movie, but it's not really explored as much as, absolutely, as it could be.
So, I mean, other than that, I don't really have anything to talk about. If you've seen, I honestly say, if you haven't watched this movie,
I thought there was a couple weird choices with nods to the original. So like his partner, instead of being Nancy Allen, this young white woman,
it's Omar from The Wire.
It's Michael K. Williams, Omar from The Wire. It's like slightly older black dude, and I thought it was interesting. Also named
Lewis.
Yeah, right. And I thought it was interesting to race swap. The gender swap feels a little like, well, you're taking a role away from like a woman who could be doing an homage to this like kind of badass character, as badass as, you know, 80s movies let women be,
right?
So that felt like kind of a bummer. And then they also they gender swapped the chief of police, kept her black, but then like made her the bad guy, which I thought was weird. Like,
yeah.
In the original, in 87, the chief of police like doesn't really have an impact on the story one way or the other, but he's like, you know, kind of a badass.
He's 100% on the side of the cops.
I mean, listen, even though he's a cop and this show does not support cops, he's a man of the people as far as that movie's universe is concerned. And in this one, the chief of police is like corrupt and a piece of shit, which, you know, ACAB, like, yeah, for sure. But in the world of the movie, that, I don't know, that was kind of a letdown.
I did like that they
obviously
had
I'm
Lewis.
Very conflicted about it.
No, I agree with you on that. I do like that I thought they had
it,
Lewis.
I think it did the movie a disservice. That's what I'm saying.
I agree with you on that 100%. I do like that they had Lewis or Omar from The Wire save him multiple times. Yeah. So, you know, he crashes a truck into an Ed 209. He also like shoots Jackie Early Haley as he's about to kill him. So, you know, RoboCop definitely needs more help in this version.
Yeah,
but he's more human in this version.
Kind of a Captain America, Thunder. What's the guy's name in Falcon Winter Soldier? Thunderstar or something? Battlestar.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Michael K. Williams, Lewis, has a weird line in this movie. Can you help me out with this?
Was it the one where he's like, when he shows up for the first time as RoboCop in the new suit, and he's like, at least you're the right color now?
Yeah. What the fuck does that mean?
He means he's black now.
Okay. I don't understand.
I don't know, man.
Like, Lewis thinks it's cool that, like, RoboCop is a black dude?
Yeah, I think that's what it's supposed to be.
Because he's painted black at that point?
Yeah, and let's talk about the suit really quick. So, like, the prototype suit when he's, like, in China and doing his the experiments before the final test is, you know, a very obvious homage to the original because it's silver. Mm-hmm. Then there is a, you know, the nightmare mode that Jay Baruchel is pitching during the marketing meeting is actually the design from the 87 movie. But then he goes to the black kind of thing and it's like, oh, let's make it more urban, more tactical. And I feel like a darker gray gunmetal would actually blend in into like a cityscape more than a pure black.
I agree. I also think that scene came 20 minutes too late into the film.
I agree. And then at the very end of the movie, you know, he's almost killed. He gets up on the roof and it has a similar ending to the original one where it's just like, oh, he realizes he can't take on an Omnicorp person. And this is Red Asset people. They have like an RFID bracelet. But he's just able to, you know, there's no like Dick Jones moment where you're fired and he's able to kill him. It's just like, he just overrides it. He's just you're threatening my family. Yeah. And I guess that's more supposed to be like, oh, the humanity outweighs the machine, but like there's no commentary on it.
Yeah. Kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah. And then he gets a new suit at the end, which is basically the prototype suit again. It's like silver again.
Yeah. I also thought it was kind of funny that we're talking about similarities to Batman, and you watched the Nolan movies this week, and there's that iconic line from Dark Knight, from Batman Begins, right? When he gets the tumbler and he goes, "Does it come in black?"
Come in black, yeah.
And that's basically the same like beat that they did in this movie. It's like, let's make it black.
Exactly the same.
And it was being delivered by Michael Keaton, who was Batman.
So oh shit! Kind of funny. Yeah, and then like this movie ends with
and by the way, they also painted his little robot bed black at the same time. I thought that was cute.
And then this movie ends with the clash, I fought the law and the law won.
Yeah, that kind of sucked.
Yeah, like weird, just Sony, and this is, you know, obviously why, you know, a lot of people, when Sony said they were going to pull Spider-Man after Far From Home, Far From Home was the first Sony movie ever to gross $1 billion. And they're like, are you guys fucking idiots? Like, you guys made the RoboCop reboot and Total Recall, and they were garbage. Like, why are you going to pull, you know, yourself out from Marvel?
Sony is maybe not great at making movies.
Yeah. And it's just like, yeah, this was not a, it's like you said, it was just noted to death. I think if we just let the director do his thing, or if they found a way to bring Verhoeven back, like, this could have been a badass. Like, they had the original writers. Like, man, if they got Verhoeven back, like, I think this could have been really interesting.
Or even bring Verhoeven on as producer and let him have a say on who directs it.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
let him have a say in what's going on.
Yeah, but I mean, I can't. I understand why they wanted a reboot. Like, you know, obviously, especially in this era. And I think it's a little. I mean, it's been 7 years. I wouldn't mind seeing a reboot of RoboCop. Actually, what I think, if I was in charge of the IP, I almost think like the best thing you can do with RoboCop would make like an open world Detroit game, where like you're slowly piecing together clues from, you know, a case that you were trying to close as Alex Murphy, and, you know, you're slowly becoming, you know, more human or something like that. But I think like an open world RoboCop game could be pretty cool. And I like the character. I don't know if we need another movie or if we should get a TV show or what.
I wouldn't mind another movie if Verhoeven was probably involved. I don't really know what he's up to these days, but I think the most important thing is that the studio just gives the fucking keys to a young, hungry director with a voice that we never hear from. I think, like, you know, Ryan Coogler taking over Creed and Black Panther. You know, we need somebody with, like,
you know, Jordan Peele could be interesting.
Yeah, we need, I mean, you know, somebody has an opinion on what's going on with cop violence right now to do like a fresh take on it.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I'm really interested to see what happens with the last season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, because they said they're going to address everything that's been going on. But
Did you notice that the bad guy Valen looks like Underworld David Spade?
No, I didn't notice that. I mean, I can see now, thinking back, you know, I can see why you'd say that, but I didn't.
I was very distracted.
Yeah, but I mean, he was just like he didn't really add anything to it. Like, the only thing, I almost feel
totally uninteresting.
That subplot, like, I think they should have had the corporation been behind the crime ring to, you know, try to increase crime so they can get robots in there. I think that would have been a better take on it. But then, you know, there was this line that I liked, once again, Jay Baruchel, where he's just like, when they realize that Alex Murphy's taking over again, and he's like, oh shit, he's solving his own murder. Why didn't I think of that? And so it's like, there's that marketing thing. Like, there were so many like little nuggets that were so close to being something, and they just never really came to fruition. And I mean, I'm repeating myself. I'm done. I can't say I recommend watching this movie. I mean, maybe if you're, you know, at a party and you have a bunch of people, but it's definitely not something you have to watch and pay attention to.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you go into it with very low expectations, or it's on in the background, it's just fine. Or if you have a morbid curiosity, but it's not a must watch.
No, not by any means. But that's it. Alex, give us your plugs. Where can our listeners find you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at Dyslexic, DYSAlexIC. I'm on Twitter at Pulisci. It's just my last name, PULISCI. And I'm also on Letterboxd. You can follow along with movies I'm watching at Pulisci.
And
Letterboxd, endorse us.
Do it. And you guys could check out everything that's MDX Pods related at mdxpods.com. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all at MDX Pods. If you want to follow along with what I've been watching on Letterboxd, I'm MDX Mike. And Letterboxd, you know, you can endorse us or something. That'd be cool. And thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.